It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston and New York to LA, where there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say that I'm proud to be an American.
Sandy Rios with you. I just wanted you to hear that. That was the beginning of the rally with President Trump last night in Nashville, Tennessee. Thousands attended, and of course, you could just feel the love of country, you know, palpable in the air. I know some would say it's love of Donald Trump. It's a respect for him and gratitude for him, but it's a whole lot more than that. It's just people longing to reestablish the America that they grew up in, the good America. There's nothing wrong with that. Trying to restore something really fine, the integrity, the strength of a country and its roots in trusting God. President Trump talks about that all the time. He may be an imperfect messenger, but he certainly sends the message, and we are grateful for that. So that was kind of the way it started, at least his portion of the evening last night. And then he had a few things to say. I particularly want to kind of zero in on his remarks about immigration, since right now, even as we speak, the House of Representatives is trying by stealth to legalize DACA, which was an illegal act by President Obama, which Mitch McConnell and Paul Reinbold swore they would do away with when they were reelected. And neither has done that, I might add. Anyway, they're trying to pass it, legalize it. They're also trying to legalize, some say estimate 17 million new illegal immigrants. Now, it's just being discussed. It's still in the works. It isn't a done deal. But that's kind of the state of things in the Congress right now, while the president's out talking about strong borders and strong security. And if we don't have a border, we don't have a nation. You know. All right, so this is what the president had to say about the midterm elections last night. Clip 9.
Washington Democrats voted against legislation to remove these criminal aliens. They voted against case law, and they voted in favor of sanctuary cities that protect criminals. And they voted in favor of catch and release, okay? So Democrats have opposed every common sense measure necessary to stop this horrendous scourge of crime, to dismantle MS-13, and to stop illegal immigration.
Yeah, so, yes. Okay, that's the end of that clip. But he was talking a lot about illegal immigration last night, and I was really glad to hear it. Then he also addressed the whole business about MS-13. Let's listen to clip 11.
I visited a place where I essentially grew up, right next door, to discuss the menace of MS-13. This vicious gang has transformed once peaceful, beautiful communities that I know so well, I know them all, into blood-stained killing fields, savagely murdering, raping, and mutilating their victims. And they don't even want to do it with a gun. They talk about gun control. They don't want to do it with a gun. They want to do it with knives. They want to cut people up into little pieces because it's more painful. And then I have to listen to Pelosi and these people saying, we have to respect them. They're human beings. They're not human beings. They're not human beings. And this is why we call the bloodthirsty MS-13 gang members exactly the name that I used last week. What was the name?
Animals.
MS-13 takes advantage of glaring loopholes in our immigration laws to infiltrate our country. That's what they do. Think of it. We're bringing them out by the thousands, but they come in.
And then he goes on to address Nancy Pelosi as an aside and calls her MS-13 loving Pelosi. So, you know, he has, of course, his style is, you know, rough, uneven, not as measured as most presidential candidates or presidents, but he really lets it, he puts it out there. And I think because we've been repressed for so long and still are really about speaking the truth, people find his style refreshing. So that's what happened in Nashville last night. And of course, while he's doing that, there are all these negotiations to reinstate the talks with North Korea. There's a North Korean official on his way to New York, I think today, to start making plans about this summit. So that's an amazing thing. That's an amazing thing. And then at the same time, something that the president did last Friday while we were all thinking about the holiday weekend, the president signed new executive orders, three of them actually, to change the civil service protections. What does that mean? It means when we talk about the swamp in D.C. and we talk about the thousands and thousands and thousands of people who work for government, they can't be fired. They're entrenched. They are mostly, I think 90% of them are on the left, either registered Democrats or on the left. They overwhelmingly give to Democrats, and they do it courtesy of your tax dollars. And they can't be purged. And that's part of the reason, no matter what their level, whether they're high-level professionals in the Justice Department or clerks in other agencies, they have tons of protections. And so the president signed three orders, and they were the following. In order to make it easier to fire people that perform poorly on their job, an executive order to sharply curtail the amount of time federal employees can be paid for union work, and three, one, directing agencies to negotiate tougher union contracts. Now, let me just give you a little bit more detail on this because this is so important. Those are kind of broad strokes. But let me just tell you that Rick Manning of Americans for Limited Government has written a great article about this, which we will put on our Facebook page from the Daily Signal. Trump puts an end to taxpayer subsidies for unions. Rick mentions that in a Freedom of Information Act requested by the Americans for Limited Government, they discovered that the Department of Veterans Affairs alone had over 250 employees working full-time for unions in 2011. Now, what does that mean? That means that your tax dollars were paying their salaries to work full-time for the union. Some of them made in excess of $170,000 per year, and that was back in 2013. They found that the IRS, same thing, tons of employees working full-time on union business while they were coming after conservatives. And I could go on and on with the various departments, but you can read that article for yourself. So the president is doing some wonderful things as much as he's doing that. By the way, I have to mention that many of us think that catalysts with getting this particular thing done was a guy named Russ Vought. You may remember his name, you might not. Russ is an evangelical Christian who was with Heritage for a number of years, and he was nominated by the president to work for the Office of Management and Budget a very long time ago. But why couldn't he get through? Why wasn't he approved by the Senate? Gee, because Senator John Cornyn from Texas, are you listening, friends in Texas? Senator John Cornyn had a hold on his nomination because of some pet project that Senator Cornyn had. Something that he was holding out for. I think it was more money for the hurricane. And so Russ Vought has been on hold for months. And now that he's in place, you can see the effects that one good man can have on the government. Shame on John Cornyn. So he can get more money. I know some of you who've been affected by the floods and the storms down there maybe feel that's a good thing. But it really isn't. Isn't there a better way? Anyway, I digress, but I have to go to something else. I want you to hear, what shall I have you hear? You know, we have to hear Catherine Herridge's report last night because we're going to talk to Andy McCarthy in a minute, and I want you to have the information that she gives before I talk to him. Let's listen.
On Twitter, the president ramped up the pressure, labeling members of the special counsel team, quote, 13 angry Democrats, who, along with Obama administration loyalists, quote, will be meddling with the midterm elections because the president said Republicans are taking the lead. As President Trump went further, questioning why they aren't investigating Hillary Clinton, the Republican-led House Oversight and Judiciary Committees are preparing for a new round of key FBI interviews in early June. Witnesses include FBI espionage chief Bill Priestap, who oversaw the Clinton email and Russia counterintelligence case. While the Russia probe officially opened in late July 2016, Comey testified Priestap told him not to inform Congress for months.
It's usually the decision of the head of our counterintelligence division.
And just again, to get the detailed on the record, why was the decision made not to brief senior congressional leadership?
Because of the sensitivity of the matter.
These text messages between FBI agent Peter Strzok, Priestap's number two, and FBI lawyer Lisa Page are drawing fresh scrutiny because they indicate Priestap went to London 2 months before the FBI officially opened the Russia case. A congressional source questioned whether the trip was connected. One committee Republican said Priestap, quote, needs to be questioned about his actions regarding the so-called Russia collusion case, including his trip to London in May 2016 and his relationship with the FBI informant. The chairman of the Freedom Caucus wants more on the timing and whether the informant and the Bureau were working together for weeks before July 2016.
When did it start? We do know that actually those confidential human sources were engaging prior to the official FBI investigation. So the question begs, at whose direction? You know, what were they collecting and who were they reporting to?
Some Republicans and Democrats dismissed the allegations.
When they began getting evidence that the Russians were engaged in a broad campaign to try and influence the 2016 election, I think it was appropriate for them to use a confidential informant to investigate what the Russians were up to.
All right, that was Catherine's report last night. Very important because there are going to be some important testimonies as she described. I want to mention to you a pretty distressing article that came out in the Daily Caller yesterday. It's titled, FBI Agents Afraid to Testify, Say Congress Likely Won't Protect Them. And they cite at least three different agents who have been very clear to say that they are they're afraid of retaliation to speak out about the Bureau's many problems. The sources say agents don't trust Congress to protect them from consequences of testifying and claim whistleblower protection laws are ineffective. And I want to read you some of the statements from some of these FBI agents. These agents believe the sluggishness, I'm reading from the Daily Caller article, these agents believe the sluggishness of the law exposes them to an inordinate risk of reprisal so that they have remained in hiding and afraid to speak the truth. A third special agent reached out to the Daily Caller to provide information about the current state of the Bureau. A former White House official who maintained direct contact with at least two agents told the Daily Caller that they are, quote, hunkering down because they see good people being thrown to the dogs for speaking out, and speaking out does nothing to solve the problems. Congress and DOJ are so weak and clueless and can't be trusted to follow through. Another agent said it's a question of basic credibility. Congress, the executive oversight, and oversight are not seen to have any gravitas. The inmates have been running the asylum and they don't respect, much less fear, their overseers. We know we'll be hung out to dry. And then they talk about how a word came down, according to some of them, from the Bureau, that warning that they had better not cooperate, they'd better not testify, they better not speak out, or they would come after them personally and also their families. They're concerned that they'll be stripped of their means of supporting their family. One guy talked about how he came out as a whistleblower and his wife, who'd had two cancer surgeries, had to go to work to support the family because he lost his job and everything. You see the dangers. All right, Andy McCarthy, former prosecutor of the Blind Sheikh, will join us next. No one knows more about this than he does, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning.
The following is not an actor, but a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management. had a lot of credit card debt and I couldn't pay my bills. I was feeling so bad. I got to a point where I needed some help. So I reached out and contacted Trinity.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813 to talk to a certified counselor.
They were able to take all of my different payments and put them all together.
Trinity will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment, put a stop to late fees and over-limit charges, reduce your interest, and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands.
And they were actually able to work with my creditors. I've been able to pay off close to $15,000 in the last 18 months.
If your debt has you down, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813.
My name is Stephanie, and I'm debt-free for keeps.
1-800-788-1813.
Putting life in perspective with Harry Reeder.
Man knows not his time. What you are seeing is a biblical truth. It is appointed unto men once to die. But the same verse that reminds us of that is borne out to be faithfully true in person after person after person, that there is appointed time to die, also says there is a time to die, and it is appointed unto men once to die, and then the judgment. And you know, Jesus Christ has come and taken our place on the cross so that when that day comes of our death, we will come before the Lord in judgment. And in that day, we can be forgiven because the judge sent his son to pay the penalty for us. And then you can hear, come in for eternity, all of you forgiven in Christ.
For additional Christian resources from Harry Reeder, download the Briarwood PCA app. Available at the App Store, Google Play, Amazon, and the Windows Store.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Paul Kizito. I'm a junior biology major here at Truett McConnell, and I came from Uganda. What I love about TMU is number one is the heart of, you know, of just the school and the love for God, for Christ. You can see it once you step on the campus. Like, you can see it's best, like, the foundation for TMU is Christianity.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Congressman Keith Ellison, the Democrat from Minnesota, says he's going to boycott the National Football League this season. Mr. Ellison is angry over the new rule that directs players to either stand for the national anthem or stay inside the locker room. He called the rule unfair, cowardly, and idiotic. That's all well and good. It's a free country. And if Mr. Ellison wants to boycott, that's his right. I mean, lots of conservatives have been boycotting the NFL for quite some time because they believe it's unfair and cowardly for high-dollar athletes to disrespect the nation. As for the Starnes household, well, we shook the proverbial dust off the doormat 2 years ago. I mean, why invest time and money in players who have so little regard for the American way? That's why we are supporting the all-new Alliance of American Football. It's a league that focuses on playing football, not politics. I'm Todd Stearns.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The whole thing with this investigation that was going on, which we consider spying, was done before Mueller got involved. But it completely taints his investigation.
There is no evidence to support that spy theory.
You can't say you're spying on the Russians if what you're trying to do is to show the Russians are colluding, whatever that means, with the Trump campaign.
It appears that there was an investigation not of the campaign, but of certain individuals who have a history that we should be suspicious of that predate the presidential campaign.
Okay, Sandy Rios back with you. That, of course, was Rudy Giuliani and then Adam Schiff and then Senator Rubio, who I don't know who's inhabited his body, but somebody. There is so much happening, as you know, even behind the scenes and especially behind the scenes on the Russian collusion, Trump's Spygate, you fill in the blanks for the name. In fact, the inspector general should be releasing his report on how the Justice Department and the FBI handled it all very soon. And certainly we'll all be watching for that. No one has followed this, really, I don't think, more closely than our next guest. And probably there is no one more qualified to sort of dissect the inner workings of the Justice Department and the FBI also in terms of how they have handled this case than Andy McCarthy. Andy, of course, you probably know him because he writes prolifically for National Review. He is the senior fellow for the National Review Institute. But before he did that, he was the prosecutor of the Blind Sheikh in the first World Trade Center bombing. And that was where Andy McCarthy first whet his appetite on all things Islamic, made himself sort of a scholar himself, really, on Islamic teaching, and went on to write so many books that were sort of the primers for many of us who have worked on that issue a number of years. But I'm talking too much. I want to introduce him. Andy, thanks for joining us this morning.
Sandy, it's my pleasure.
You know what, Andy, you're in your latest article, Spy Name Games. I want to jump to something because I think there's a lot of confusion right now about the Justice Department now and the Justice Department under Barack Obama. And I want to read something that you wrote. It says, the Obama administration blatantly politicized the government's intelligence and law enforcement apparatus. Their chicken little shrieks that public disclosure of FISA warrants and texts between FBI agents would imperil security have proven overblown at best and in some instances to be cynical attempts to hide embarrassing facts. What do we know for sure? I mean, is that a supposition, Andy, or is it provable that the Obama administration blatantly politicized the government's intelligence?
Well, Sandy, according to the whistleblowers in the intelligence community itself, this is something that can't even be disputed. They all, I think it was some 50 of them toward the end of Obama's administration, complained that their product, their intelligence analysis based on the intelligence that was being gathered by our spy agencies, was being manipulated in order to serve Obama political narratives. And I don't think we have to speculate much about that. We know in the most notorious example, of course, that the administration pretended that the Benghazi atrocity in which four Americans, including our ambassador, were murdered by jihadists, the administration pretended that that was caused by a demonstration gone awry that was provoked by an anti-Muslim video, when in fact it's clear that what caused it was the Obama administration's policy in Libya. So, you know, we went through 8 years of the agencies of government being weaponized, most prominently the Justice Department and the Internal Revenue Service, and 8 years of the intelligence product being politicized to serve whatever Obama's ends of the moment were. And I think if we can't take that as a given, then it's hard to have these conversations then.
You know, you are one of the few people that has actually read the page after page after page after page of texts between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, who were the two of the, without going into a lot of detail, both of them were very clued in, keyed in participants, players in the surveillance of the Trump team and in the really non-investigation of Hillary Clinton's email. All right, so you actually read these, and one of the things that you pointed out, Andy, that I did not know, you say in all those redacted portions, a lot of FBI officials' names are revealed, but hardly any of the Justice Department or the National Intelligence Agencies. No one else, to my knowledge, has pointed that out. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, my thoughts are that it's appalling that they have tried to get away with what they've been able to get away with, which is they make their own rules up about what ought to be disclosed and what ought to be redacted. And what's clearly gone on here from the beginning, Sandy, is that they're just trying to exhaust everyone. I mean, they claim ad nauseum that we can't tell you this or we can't tell you that because it would be a threat to national security and, a variety of other sky is falling type reasons, rationales for not telling us things. And then when Congress finally gets its back up and demands disclosure and starts to threaten to hold people in contempt or even impeach people, and we get a little bit more disclosure, what we find is that what they're hiding are things that are embarrassing, not things that have anything to do with protecting national security. And I think that the Strzok Page texts are a great example because they, you know, they're intimidating even to think about trying to get into them because they look like the phone book, you know, and it's page after page of these little slibs of text messages going back and forth. I think that, you know, people are reluctant to sort of dig into them, and the FBI and the Justice Department knew that they could probably get away with redacting a lot of stuff that they prefer not to get out there. And that's been a good strategy on their part. So far, they've dragged their feet, and nobody seems to be in a big hurry to get the stuff that's in there unredacted, even though there isn't a very good rationale for why they held back names and a lot of other information besides names.
But I just think it's so interesting that it's like the FBI was thrown under the bus with their names, but not justice and not the intelligence agencies. One of the things that stood out to me about that.
I would just say that because these are texts between people who work for the FBI about people who they work with, if they had redacted the FBI names, there would be nothing published.
Yeah. I want to come back to their texts if we can, but I want to I bet you saw this, Andy, but I just did. Eric Holder's been tweeting, you know, he's a big tweeter also, kind of like Roseanne. But he doesn't get in trouble for what he tweets. And basically what he tweeted was that the DOJ should not cooperate with any inquiry, with any questions. In fact, he says, more DOJ norms being eroded. Trump, a subject of the investigation, wants access to material related to the inquiry. His congressional supporters want evidence connected to an ongoing investigation. Time for DOJ, FBI to simply say no. Protect the institutions and time-tested norms. What would he make of that? A former attorney general telling the Justice Department to ignore.
This is the best defense is a good offense. And what Holder is doing is trying to obstruct the investigation of the investigators. And, you know, I guess my reaction is twofold. Number one, it's quite remarkable for Holder to be talking about norms when we're talking about a situation in which the incumbent administration used its counterintelligence and law enforcement powers to spy and monitor the opposition campaign, which is quite a departure from a norm. And the other thing that strikes me, Sandy, is that these guys need to get their story straight, because the Washington establishment's story in the last week has been that Trump wasn't under investigation. That's what Trey Gowdy and Marco Rubio and Clapper and all these guys are out there saying, you know, no. It was just three or four attenuated members of the Trump campaign. It had nothing to do with Trump. It had nothing to do with the campaign. Now Holder wants to put Trump right back in the middle of it again, which is going to disappoint his pals in Washington who are saying nothing to see here because Trump wasn't a suspect.
You know, it's been interesting to read what you've written through the months here. And because initially, and I know that this is still true, you know James Comey, you know Robert Mueller, you've worked with these guys. I mean, these have been friends, at least professional friends of yours, maybe personal, I don't know, I'm not asking that question. But Andy, it's harder. You know, when you have these relationships, it's a lot harder. But do you think at this point, after all that you've discovered and been reading and writing about, that there is any potential for criminal complaints against either of those gentlemen, Bob Mueller or James Comey?
I don't see any potential at the moment for criminal liability. And I always think, Sandy, not that I want to deflect your question, but that's always to be very secondary when we're dealing with government officials. I always think that what you need with government officials, and let's be clear, Mueller hasn't done anything to this point that warrants him being investigated. For all the hoo-ha about Mueller, he's been at this for over a year now, and he hasn't brought any charges that even remotely suggest that he's trumping up a case against Trump. I mean, there's nothing about collusion, there's nothing about Trump. He's brought a lot of charges at this point, but nothing about the main rationale for his investigation in the first place. So I think he's got to be allowed to continue to just finish his work because it'd be too politically explosive to interrupt it at this point. And with respect to Jim Comey, you know, I think that he has done things which were outside the guidelines of the FBI and the Justice Department, particularly in talking about, publicly talking about investigations, which shouldn't be done. And, you know, we've broken some norms here because the FBI and the Justice Department clearly did investigate the Trump campaign. I think that needs to be investigated, and we need to have political accountability. Whether at the end of the day we determine that people committed actions that are actually violations of criminal law, to me, is very interesting, but it's secondary to finding out what happened and if there was an abuse of power and holding people accountable that way.
Do you have as high an expectation about that, the report that's coming up by the Inspector General, as many people do? I kind of find myself wondering if we're being set up for disappointment here.
Yeah, I think that's a fair expectation or a fair concern. I have it myself. I mean, unfortunately, as you've just pointed out, Sandy, in this investigation, I happen to know like almost everybody who's involved in it for 30 years, and Mike Horowitz is yet another guy I know from the U.S. Attorney's Office in New York. I think very well of him. I think he's performed well up until now. But I always think that when Washington starts to tell you that something in terms of explosiveness is going to be a 10, what they're trying to do is raise everyone's expectations before they release a 4. So, you know, I'm just going to sit back and see what the report says.
There's a really, really actually pretty depressing article in the Daily Caller that came out yesterday afternoon. I shared a little bit of it with my audience before you joined me, Andy. It's about how FBI agents are afraid to testify, and they basically are saying, they're quoting three here without naming them, that basically there's really no power, and the people that are in charge know that they just a waiting game. They have to wait until, some resolution to the Trump leadership, and they just are ignoring things because they're not taking it seriously. And FBI agents are afraid to speak out, those that even know stuff that went on, because they know that they will be so punished, lose their jobs, and cause themselves such personal anguish, they're not willing to do it. Do you really think, Andy, we will get justice, meaning know what's really true, and that people that did things that were really wrong should be brought made responsible for what they've done? Do you have expectation that might happen?
You know, a long time ago during the Blind Shake case, Sandy, Judge Mukasey, when I was railing at one point, Judge Mukasey was later Attorney General Mukasey, when I was railing at some point about something the defense lawyers were doing and, you know, what their evil intentions were behind whatever, you know, sharp game they were playing, and I wanted him to come down on them like a ton of bricks, and he looked at me and explained, and I've always been guided by this ever since. He explained that what I was looking for was poetic justice, and what courts are in the business of and what investigators are in the business of is prosaic justice. So if you're hoping to get like some cosmic level of comeuppance for people who've done wrong, I'm not sure that happens on this side of the grave. What I hope will happen is that there'll be a thorough, competent investigation, and there'll be enough follow-up that we can get a reasonable idea of what actually happened here. And if things, as I suspect, happen that shouldn't have happened, we can take curative measures to try to prevent them from happening again. But I'm too old and jaded at this point to hope that we're going to achieve cosmic justice.
Yes, well, I'm kind of there with you, but I always hope. You know, we can always be hopeful, and I do think we have gotten a lot more information and sort of swayed public opinions in ways I never thought possible, to be honest with you. Andy, we always run out of time. There's so much to talk about. You know, there's going to be testimonies before more committees with Bill Priestap, whose name is not so familiar to people, but he's going to have some key information, so there'll be more coming out. And you'll be writing more. And by the way, Andy's recent article is Spy Name Games. We'll put it on our Facebook page so that you can research it. Andy, thank you for your great work, as always.
Thanks so much, Sandy.
Okay, talk to you soon. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
And who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Esther, a young girl, became queen of the Persian Empire when Israel was subject to Persian rule. A wicked man named Haman tried to get the king to exterminate all Jews. Esther, a Jew herself, was queen when this genocidal conspiracy was brought to bear, but her uncle Mordecai put her royal position in perspective. Perhaps God made you queen just for this very moment, to intervene on behalf of the Jewish people. Like Esther, perhaps God gave you the platform, position, and influence you have for this very moment, to stand against darkness. Perhaps you were born for such a time as this.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Exposing Washington with Walker Wildman.
So who is responsible for the dysfunction in Washington? That's what we're going to be discussing today.
We have become one of the most litigious societies on the planet.
The goal of this show is to bring clarity to the news coming out of Washington, D.C., and to expose the deception that has plagued our nation's capital for decades.
Exposing Washington.
Each Saturday at 2:30 p.m. Central.
On American Family Radio.
This is Tim Armstrong from the Worthy Walk radio program, inviting you to join us as we study the scriptures verse by verse each day, Monday through Friday at 6:30 p.m. Central Time here on American Family Radio. We will study the Word of God and learn to apply its truths to our lives each day. The Worthy Walk, Monday through Friday at 6:30 p.m. Central Time on American Family Radio.
Hi, this is Jim Stanley, and we're partnering with the Ministry of Preborn to help save babies' lives through ultrasound. Here's how a nurse describes the power of an ultrasound.
Last week, just one example of a mom who came in was very abortion-minded, and when she saw the picture of her baby on ultrasound and heard that beating heart, it was a defining moment that just broke her, and she said, "I just can't allow this baby to be killed."
By letting a mother hear her baby's heartbeat and see her baby in the womb, she will choose life 80% of the time.
I cannot tell you how many times a baby's life is saved through ultrasound. It's just an incredible tool.
Underwrite a free ultrasound and help save a baby's life. Go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Or dial #250 and say keyword baby. All gifts are tax deductible. Your love can save a life.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo yesterday put a spotlight on his personal commitment and that of the Trump administration to the cause of religious freedom. His department released a new report documenting the plight of people around the world persecuted for their faith and underscoring his determination not simply to illuminate but to oppose such repression. Mr. Pompeo unveiled an upcoming summit for that purpose with like-minded foreign ministers. That can be a welcome opportunity to showcase the problem. To be of enduring value, however, it must translate into accountability and costs for those responsible. Specifically, Mr. Pompeo's Religious Freedom Ministerial has to address the fact that those being most horrifically oppressed for their faith worldwide are Christians. Some 215 million of them are being heavily persecuted. That must end. This is Frank Gaffney. Find out how you can help at SaveThePersecutedChristians.org.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Roseanne Barr had been on top of the world. Her resurrected show, featuring her as a pro-Trump housewife, a huge hit for ABC.
How could you have voted for him, Roseanne?
He talked about jobs, Jackie. He said he'd shake things up.
Look at Roseanne. I called her yesterday. Look at her ratings.
But hours ago, in the blink of a tweet, ABC canceled Roseanne over the star's ugly comments about former Obama White House official Valerie Jarrett. Comments the network called abhorrent, repugnant, and inconsistent with our values. The offending tweet, using Jarrett's initials, said, "If Muslim Brotherhood and Planet of the Apes had a baby equals VJ." Jared is black, so the ape reference caused a social media uproar. But at first, Barr did not back off. When Twitter users called the line racist, Barr responded that Muslims are not a race. She later tweeted that she'd been making a joke, before finally saying this: I apologize to Valerie Jarrett and to all Americans. I am truly sorry for making a bad joke about her politics and her looks. But the outrage mounted. Actress Wanda Sykes, who worked with the program, said she would not be returning next season. Barr's talent agency, ICM, dropped her. Al Sharpton said that comparing Jarrett to an ape is racist and inexcusable. ABC must take action now. Many other comedians have survived offensive jokes. Stephen Colbert made a sexual crack about President Trump and Vladimir Putin. Kathy Griffin is mounting a comeback after posing with a bloody Trump mask. Wanda Sykes herself once called Rush Limbaugh the 20th hijacker who failed to show up on 9/11 because of a drug addiction. A key difference? Barr's mockery of Jarrett touched the third rail of race. The furor prompted Bob Iger, the CEO of parent company Disney, to say there was only one thing to do here, and that was the right thing. ABC acted with stunning swiftness to protect its brand, although the show had been very lucrative. In this hyper-polarized Twitter era, a network's reputation can be tarnished as quickly as a top star can self-destruct.
All right, that was Howard Kurtz, of course, of Fox News. Very interesting. I'm sure you all saw Roseanne has her show has been canceled. Suddenly, like within 3 hours of the tweet that she tweeted about Valerie Jarrett, basically the tweet said something about if the Muslim Brotherhood and the Planet of the Apes had a baby, it would be Valerie Jarrett. That's what she said. That's what she tweeted. So, you know, Roseanne, there's so much to say. Where should I start? I could just start by saying that Roseanne Barr is has been for decades a loose cannon. She has said so many outrageous things and done so many outrageous things. In fact, just to take you back in time a little bit, you may remember that she, you might not remember because this goes way, way, way back. She claimed in 1991 to People magazine that she was an incest survivor. And then she said on Oprah later live that that wasn't true. She regretted her comments, that it wasn't true what she had said. And then she posted a picture of herself. This was just recently, a picture of herself swollen and bloodied with a Twitter caption that said, "Got in a tussle with Bill Cosby." And then you should have seen the blank. You know, she has other foul things to say, but she posted that picture of herself. And you might remember that in 1990, remember that she was singing the national anthem for the Cincinnati Reds and the San Diego Padres? And it sounded like this.
Tell me when I should start.
Right now?
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight are the
okay, well, you get the gist of it. That happened back in 1990 while she's grabbing her crotch while she's singing. I mean, it was disgusting and people didn't like it. They booed her and she was roundly criticized. Roseanne Barr is a very loose cannon. She just is. She is of the comedic stripe that's like the equivalent of a shock jock who say, you know, things that no one else will say and do things that most people won't do. Comedians used to, many of them fell in that category before political correctness came into the business. Now, she's older, an older comedian, so she may not have quite gotten the message yet that you there are some things you just can't say. You know, so many of them have crashed and burned over saying things. Who's the guy who plays Kramer on Seinfeld? He made some sort of a comment about, I don't even know what it was, some allegedly racist statement in his stand-up comedy routine. And he was basically destroyed over that. That was probably like, that was in the last six or 7 years, something like that. It's just, you just can't do it. You can't do it in today's political climate. But this is interesting to me. Also, she, back in 2009, she did a photo shoot where she dressed as Adolf Hitler and said she couldn't wait to breed with non-Jewish people. She posed while eating and baking burnt Jew cookies, she called them. And the defense of that was that it was done for what was supposed to be Heeb. That's the name of this magazine. It's supposed to be a satirical magazine. But my point is this. Roseanne Barr has been saying and doing outrageous things for a very long time. This is nothing new. I'm not defending her at all. I didn't like the things she did. I hated what she did when she sang at the anthem. I hate the other things I've just told you that she's done. But I would say this, that in a country that's supposed to have a free speech, I have a problem when people say really outrageous things and then are consequently absolutely destroyed permanently, which is what's happening to her. She'll never get another job in Hollywood. She has tweeted an apology. You know, that usually works in this culture. You just say, I'm sorry. You don't have to even mean it. You just say you're sorry and you're reinstated. We could just, the list of people who've done this is endless. But not so with Roseanne, because I think probably because her particular show, and I, you know what, I'm a television illiterate. I have to tell you, I know so little about what happens on television. I watch the news, and to be honest with you, sometime I'll take a little diversion and I'll tell you what I really like to watch. I like to watch Turkish dramas. I know, they're subtitled. Isn't that weird? I'm weird. So I don't know anything about Roseanne, but I have heard that it's a, you know, that she's a Trump supporter in this, and that it's, that was very controversial, very successful. They just signed her for a new season. And so, you know, you can't help but wonder if some of that didn't factor into the lack of mercy for Roseanne. People say really stupid, horrendous things. Just think of the Washington Correspondents' Dinner. When Michelle Wolf, the host, said the most horrific things about the president, just horrible things, and that's okay, you see. And then, of course, we have Kathy Griffin, who Howard Kurtz just mentioned, showing this, you know, bloodied, severed head of Donald Trump. Now, she was punished for that, but she's on her comeback tour. She's recovering. Wanda Sykes, you know, was a producer for Roseanne's show. Wanda is one of the... She's hilarious, but she's a shock comedian herself. I wish I had a list of, I probably couldn't read them, the things that Wanda Sykes has said. But this is on race, and so it's something that you just can't do. You cannot talk about race. You can't even hint of it. I know, I better not say this word either. There's a word that's based on the original root of the word, it's Niger. It's related to the word Niger. And there's an adjective that has nothing to do with race. And somebody quoted that adjective a few years ago and was, you know, I think lost their job, was in deep trouble. But the word doesn't have anything to do with race. It's a description of something else. So we've gotten to a hypersensitive place where we cannot even express inappropriate thoughts for fear of, you know, really such strong retaliation. I think that's really frightening, to be honest with you, because we're all capable, you know, of saying things in our private lives or that's impolitic, that if we really stopped and measured our words, we wouldn't say it. If we think about saying it, then we think about where the thoughts come from. We try to stop it there, you know, our hearts. Roseanne now is out, man. She is out big time. But this is how the left is spinning this. And this is interesting to me. Now, this was, I saw several clips, but I wanted you to hear this one. Steve Schmidt is a political consultant. He's a Republican political consultant, but he is one of the many never Trumpers, hates President Trump. He worked for, well, let's see, George W. Bush, John McCain. So you fill in the blanks, you know how this goes. So he was on MSNBC. And he started talking about America and racism, and I actually thought this first part was excellent. I want you to hear it.
The nativism, the racism that you speak of, this is the original sin of the country, slavery. The idea that our country, the only one in the world ever founded on the power of an idea that all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with inalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, did not extend to everybody. It extended to white men. Over time, it has enfranchised women and gays and African Americans and Hispanic Americans. And the whole story of the country is the struggle that has existed between that perfect ideal and the forces that want to move us nearer from our flawed reality closer to it. And what we see now is a retrenchment, a pulling back from it. We've seen this play out in our history before. We saw it with African Americans after the First World War, where they fought valorously in France and thought they would come home to a country where they defended democracy abroad, that maybe this would be their hour. And all these Confederate statues that went up in the 1920s went up not to celebrate Civil War victories, but to send a political message to African Americans.
All right, well, you could argue with some of that, but I think basically he's right that the American story has been one, that's not the only issue, but some people make it the only issue. Slavery was a big issue. It was a huge issue from the very foundings, and there was a huge argument, as you know, in the Continental Congress and in forming the Constitution. There were lots of our founding fathers who hated slavery, wanted to do away with it. There were others in the South who refused to come to any kind of an agreement unless slavery were kept in place. And it was continued to be a struggle for 100 years until we had a civil war and hundreds of thousands of people lost their lives trying to sort this out. And we've been trying to sort it out ever since. But one could say we've made tremendous progress. And one could also say, I remember Dinesh D'Souza saying in his book, What's So Great About America, that the thing that's great about America is not, that's unusual, is not that we had slavery, because lots of countries have slavery, but that we did away with it. And we have tried desperately to reinstate the equality of all people, regardless of race or creed. And I think that that can be said about America, honestly. But now Steve Schmidt goes off the rails and is doing what the left is doing, trying to blame Roseanne's tweet about Valerie Jarrett on President Trump. Let's listen.
This vile conduct by Roseanne Barr, it's not a joke. It is a stone cold racist statement by one of the most prominent public supporters of a racist president who time and time again has shown us his true colors, and not for the first time at Charlottesville when he lectures the country and he says that, well, there's good Nazis out there. And the one thing we should all be clear on, despite what our ideological differences may be, there are no good Nazis. Not there, not here, not back in those days, and certainly not in these days. And so we see the stirring of the race cauldron by this president, part of a very deliberate strategy to incite his base with conspiracy theories, with dishonesty, with lying, with race baiting. He is stirring up every worst toxin that's been buried in the ground in this country and bringing it back up to the surface, and he's doing it on purpose.
I'm not sure if he's talking about President Trump or President Obama, because that's what I remember. I remember President Obama being the one who stirred up racism. I remember Eric Holder making his first public statement as Attorney General that racism was the biggest issue he was going to tackle. And I have to tell you, he said, we're a nation of cowards when it comes to race. And I remember thinking, what's he talking about? Because I can tell you, I've lived through, look, I'm white. I'm a white woman. Yeah, I don't deny that. That's true. I have watched firsthand since I was a little girl, the real racism in this country. The total terrible treatment of Black Americans. I watched it and grieved. Could not bear it. I've watched the evolution of those relationships. I've built relationships myself in that community, wonderful relationships. I've seen Black and white Americans learn to live and work together in a way that I didn't think possible when I was a little girl. But I saw Barack Obama dismantle that and agitate it and aggravate it, because that's what the left does. They stir up trouble. They find a festering sore and they make it ooze pus, because that's how they gain power. So I don't see that in President Trump, Mr. Schmidt, but I certainly did see it in Barack Obama, and you see where he's left us. The rise of tensions where we can't even, you know, be in politic with one another. We have to be so careful. I think that when you're with true friends, you say what you think, and then you just work it out. Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.